On Groundhog Day, there were some stormy conditions in the Midlands and little evidence of a red high pressing front coming down from the north. Overnight, however, conditions have eased somewhat and a sunnier future is predicted for the Anfield area with scattered Suarez and a light sprinkling of Sturridge. It's the Day Trippers. On Groundhog Day, there were some stormy conditions in the Midlands and little evidence of a red high pressing front coming down from the north. Overnight, however, conditions have eased somewhat and a sunnier future is predicted for the Anfield area with scattered Suarez and a light sprinkling of Sturridge. It's the Day Trippers. On tonight's show, we're joined fresh from his transfer deadline spectacular by the Redmen TV's Paul Machen. We put forward our shouts for the worst forward in the number 10 role in our worst all-time 11 section. We talk about Ben Foster's hoodoo over Luis Suarez and dropping points to West Brom. We look forward to the visit of the Voyeur and his band of title hopefuls, and we finish, as ever, with listeners' questions. First up, we return to filling out our worst Liverpool 11s, and it's the turn of our strikers now. We're going to look at the shittiest support strikers, or number 10s, that we've endured in our LFC watching careers. So we're going to go first to our guest on the line tonight, Paul Machen. Who would you choose in that role?
It's interesting because you obviously got the agenda through and you're saying number 10s, and it's whether you wanted specific 10s or people who play in and around that hole, because we can do both, because there have been, as you say, just a plethora of shitty players who've tried to play in that position over the years.
Yeah.
I think it's between two, and I'll go for I'll have to go for one of the two, and it's going to be everyone's favourite Ukrainian. the Harry Potter Malfoy extra himself, Andrew Vollerman.
Excellent. And just to elaborate as to why, as if you have to, but go ahead.
Well, he had the number 10 shirt and he was fucking garbage.
that's
the worst thing about it is that we got him and he was rubbish, and then we loaned him out and he was good. And we all were fooled into this false sense of security. It's like, no, we're getting him back. Well, he's done really well on loan. That's like, he'll be all right. No. Big pile of shite when he came back as well. So, yeah, Andrew Varnon.
Andre Varnon. Thanks, Paul. James Owens, your shout.
I want to make a quick point on Varnon first. I think he was all right in his first season. He actually, I don't know if people know this, but I remember looking at the time because I was coming to his defence. He had a better minutes per goal ratio than Ryan Babel last season, and it was an injury-interrupted season as well. So...
that's nowhere near as funny, James. Come on. don't piss on me, Bonfire.
His wrestling career as Triple H was a lot better, wasn't it?
Anyway, James, sorry. Back to you, Chief. Your shout.
That's not particularly funny, but it's about to get funny, I can tell you now, because I don't think I'm on next week, so I don't give a fuck about your rules. I'm going to cheat. he's not a number 10.
Right.
But I'm not on next week, so I'm not going to say it, so I'm going to fucking say it now. It's Andy Carroll, right?
And hey!
Two out-and-out strikers, and I mean, because I'm going to ask you, yesterday's game wasn't very eventful, so can I just do a bit on this? Because I could fucking go on all night.
Yes.
Right, Andy Carroll, I won't actually take too long, you know, hopefully. I think the thing with Carroll is, I feel sorry for him one way, because I don't think he wanted to leave Newcastle. But by the time he got shipped out of Liverpool, because we got Brendan Rodgers in, he decided to try a leg and he didn't want to leave Liverpool. So I feel a bit sorry for him, really. He's kind of a victim of Gillette and Hicks, because if it hadn't been for Gillette and Hicks, Fernando, we wouldn't have gone out of the Champions League, and Fernando Torres wouldn't have gone to Chelsea, and we wouldn't have had like £50 million burning a hole in our pocket on transfer deadline day. But it's one of the worst signings any club's ever made. If he'd been an effective player, he would have been effective in a very ugly Liverpool team, but he wasn't even effective because we brought other bad players to try and serve him. And the problem with him is he's not a goal scorer. You know, he's like the ALS equivalent of a number 10. If you're Sam Allardyce, like he's your Philip Coutinho or your...
He can play a bit. He can play a bit.
Play off him in the final third. And yeah. he provides the assist from 9 feet in the fucking air. And it was just calamitous. £35 million fucking pounds for that. And it was, you know, it was, as I said, it set us back 2 years. Carroll and everything that followed as a consequence of buying him. And we could have been back in the fucking Champions League by now if we not bought him. Anyway, that's about it for me, yeah.
Excellent. Definitive there from James Owens.
I feel like that was just an Andy Carroll just agenda you tried to do.
Yeah, you're picking up on that as well.
Yeah, that's exactly
we're discussing centre backs this week, yeah, but let me tell you about Andy Carroll.
Good shout for centre back, actually. Stephen Brown, your call.
I've gone with Farron as well.
Okay.
He was. Starting from the hair down was just cat.
Yeah.
I can't put into words how bad he is. He annoyed the shit out of me.
Right. Okay.
He bothered me. I remember going to a game. I can't even remember what game it was. And he came on. Liverpool were winning. Came on for Torres. And his first touch actually went over his own head from the ground. The ball was played into his feet. And whatever he done, the ball ended up spinning back over his own head. And he didn't mean it.
Magician.
Bergkamp-esque,
like.
But he didn't mean it. He went the other way. The ball went behind him and he went forward. It was... No, I just... Jesus Christ, now he was horrendous.
Andy Young.
Best worst striker, Morientes.
Morientes.
Yeah, Morientes, for me, seemed to score goals for everyone except us.
I thought you would have went with Lippmann and being underused as a number 10. Best worst, because he wasn't used.
Yeah, no, he's definitely in the running, all right, but no, I haven't.
And did you pick someone else ahead of Gary Lippmann?
I'll first pick Morientes.
Yeah, that's what just happened there, right? Phil Casey, I'll bring you in, even though you don't want to talk much, Steve.
I'm on Andy's tip this week, but mine is Nigel Clough.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
He was brought in as the true heir to Kenny Dalglish. He was this wonderful English sort of number 10 continental style number nine.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, to be brought into, you know, to make it, to bring the second generation of the Liverpool team. And to be honest with you, bar his debut, it never happened. It never ever happened. And he's another one of those players that goes down in the Souness area that just didn't happen. Paul Stewart and Nigel Clough were in my side. I had Mark Walters as well.
I've got the 92 FA Cup final team. Okay, well, I'll round it out with Andre Voronin as well. I'm not just going to talk any more about it because it's obvious. Before we begin our post-mortem on the West Brom match, we need to look back on the transfer window and what went so spectacularly wrong. Now, Paul Machin, you did sterling work there monitoring what was going on, monitoring being the key word. What were your immediate thoughts afterwards, given the lack of action?
Well, my immediate thoughts afterwards was, can I have a pint and go to bed? But on the transfer window itself, it was a big disappointment, wasn't it? I think it's weird. I think we ended up serving as some sort of like online video based Samaritans for the vast majority of Liverpool fan base. And most of the people in the room.
Were there a lot of people reaching out, Paul? Were they looking for solace? Were they?
I've got to give something back, right? But it was disappointing. The way it's disappointing. I think some people are absolutely distraught, and I don't get that. I think it's for me, and I always try to take a wider, you know, look at the bigger picture, because football, we get so bogged down in the here and now and the immediacy of it all. It's one of them. If Jordan Ibe comes into the side at the end of the season and scores the goal or puts us in fourth place, then I won't give a shit that we haven't signed anyone, because it's meant he's had his chance. But ultimately, there were so many spaces in that. There's so many deficiencies in that squad. It seemed mental to me. With a week to go, I was saying, there's no way we're not signing someone. You know, there's no way. I couldn't fathom a situation where we wouldn't sign someone. So I was genuinely shocked when we actually didn't. It was mad.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in that same situation. James Owens, what about yourself in terms of an immediate reaction to the lack of activity?
Well, I think we all thought for a while, didn't we? You know, we were all looking at it pretty much in the moment of the day the last window closed, because all we did really, we got in centre backs, we got in Victor Moses on loan. We thought, right, okay, there's money left there from the kind of the 20-25 million we didn't spend at a marquee signing, obviously minus the fact that we didn't sell Skirtle as we expected to. There's maybe 15 million kicking around, and we're thinking, right, okay, a big push here to get players in for January to really kind of, I know you said galvanise that, to really kind of reinforce that kind of push for the top four. You even sort of allowed ourselves to hope we'd get people in early. And in the end, it's not happened. I mean, the slightly disconcerting thing is, okay, look, Salah, we probably pissed about too much and allowed Chelsea in. Conor Bianca, it looks like we've been unfortunate to deal with an absolute prick of an owner, basically. And so what happens there, whether we go back or not, I mean, because from what, something doesn't add up there. I mean, from what's come out about, oh, we met the release clause, well, why has it not happened then? I mean, is there not a potential legal challenge there from us or from the player? Mm. I don't know. So that's strange, but I think we've, you know, regardless of the rights or wrongs of how we proceed, if we've got any kind of recourse to do that from here, we've been a bit unfortunate there to be dealing with, to be dealing with complete prick, I think, from the sounds of it, but... Mm.
Yeah, and it looked, didn't it, James, as though there was a really big push on from the club's point of view to try and just exonerate the club of any blame in this. Brendan talking about everybody being out there. Basically, the cook was out there. Everyone from the club was out there.
But I mean, what I don't get as well, obviously, well, I mean, there's been a lot of criticism of the fact that very, very quickly after the window closed, a video with Brendan Rodgers appears saying he's happy with the squad we've got. You know, I'm sure we were still trying to sign the guy, but he probably, I mean, my attitude to that is, I mean, like, calm down a little bit, because he's probably, there's always that possibility it doesn't happen, so he's probably been, he's recorded, like, you know, answers to a question in preparation for that kind of eventuality, so he went over.
Yeah, it's like Who Shot Mr. Burns, and they've got, like, all these...
yeah, multiple endings, yeah.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah, that's literally what it probably, it's probably what it is, but I mean, but the slightly more disconcerting thing is the fact that, I mean, well, look, I mean, Sunday's a classic example. I mean, Conor Bianca wouldn't have been ready anyway. He probably wouldn't have been registered in time and all that kind of thing. But we are in a situation where every good attacking player we've got is on the pitch. And, you know, one more from the bench to just impact the game, even if it was just to make the opposition shit themselves a bit, would help in a situation like we were in on Sunday. It wouldn't have helped this Sunday, because I said Conor Bianca wouldn't have been ready. But in that sense, an attacking player would have helped. But generally speaking, you can afford to drop some points when you're trying to get in the top three or top four, and we do score for fun. What is slightly disconcerting is not going for a midfielder or a fullback, particularly when, I mean, the things I was hearing around people who kind of have got some quite good contacts in and around the club when I was at the deadline day thing with Paul and the lads on Friday is Jose Enrique could be out quite a while longer. And I mean, fucking Ali Sissoko at left back, you know.
Mm.
He's so, I mean, it's funnily enough, he actually got past his man once on Sunday, but he's so limited. And obviously then we've got, you know, hearing other things, you hear very conflicting things about whether Johnson's going to be back soon or whether he is out indefinitely. So to not kind of go for a fullback if it's that bad, it's more worrying that we kind of, yeah, didn't seem to go for a fullback or a midfielder as well. So the only consolation, I mean, I will wrap up on this now, is the teams around us generally have done little or nothing either. You know, Everton have bought in Lassina Traore. You know, if he's going to do us now, it's not going to be by scoring against us unless it's in the cup. So that's, you know, wouldn't worry too much about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, and obviously United have bought in Mata, which, hey, he could go and work miracles, but it's not done anything about central midfield. It's not done anything about an ageing defence either. So, and the other thing with all this is, and, you know, this is relevant to the result yesterday as well, we are at least the team in possession as far as fourth place is concerned. If we're not unduly unlucky with injuries, we might get away with it, but it is a bit of a gamble. Definitely is a gamble, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Andy Young, your thoughts on that being a bit of a gamble, the strategy that we seem to be following with our transfers. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I wasn't terribly pissed off not signing Conor Bianca because I'd never heard of him, and that's, I was just putting it in perspective, like, to sign him or not sign him, like, they weren't addressing what everybody seems to see as the real problem, and that's the fullback. So, like, I think it's an almighty gamble now, kind of relying on Sissoko now, and what if he picks up a knock or Flano gets another knock? Like, I think that's the real root of the problem. Now, Gerrard seems to put in two decent performances at defensive midfield. Maybe he can do a job there, but again, you just prefer the cover there given the injuries you've had in midfield as well. So I'd be more pissed off with that than the fiasco that went on transfer deadline day. Like, you can nearly make a film out of it, like, in air over there, and fucking Dina Pro owner saying, listen, leave the money in unmarked banknotes in a briefcase in the subway. And like,
that's a valid question. Have we got the money back? We probably have no transfer budget now for the summer now. Can we have the money back?
You'd love to actually see what went on in the room, Ian Air gallivanting around the world on jollies, and doing fuck all, really. It's crazy, really. Yeah. Think about it.
Right, well, let's get away from the depressing subject of what didn't happen and look on to the depressing subject of what did happen, and that's the West Brom Liverpool match of the weekend. How appropriate it was Groundhog Day over the weekend, yet another disjointed performance in which we struggled to find a rhythm, and an individual defensive mistake seemed to cost us. Our away form's a bit of a concern at the moment, Liverpool holding one of the worst away records in the league, but we remain fourth, so there may yet be a happy ending. We better start, I suppose, with the manager's performance, because we tend to. A bit of the old bipolar Brendan going on here over the last two fixtures. He got it spectacularly right against Everton. Seemed to get it quite wrong against West Brom. Is that fair, would you say? I'll come to you, Stephen Brown.
I know after watching the Everton game, we all said that's a tactical victory for Brendan Rodgers over Martinez, because it was clever, it was smart, it was the way we should have set up in the game. Yesterday was completely the opposite. It was just as if he tried to outthink himself. I know at one stage it was a 3-1-4-1-1, I don't even know, it was, everything was just all over the place. There was one set where Gerrard played excellently, as we discussed this. I thought he played excellently for the first 60 minutes. The lads say he played excellently for the full 90. He was doing the role that he was specifically asked to do yesterday. It just seemed to fall apart around him. Henderson was anonymous second half. We just didn't start the game.
But coming back to the manager specifically and where he got it right and where he got it wrong, would you have an issue with how he laid out the team to start the game?
No, because it was the same team that played on Tuesday, but the difference was that West Brom were never going to come at us like Everton did. So it should have been the same personnel, but possibly different formations. Now, Rodgers, the formation Rodgers went with yesterday, looking back in hindsight, obviously didn't work. It's hard to say what he could have done, what he should have done. Maybe it was 4-3. It was the time to go 4-3-3. But then again, when we got caught in the middle, it's a kind of him and Han over what to do, what's the best option. Didn't seem to work at all.
Fair enough. Andy, you've got thoughts?
Yeah, it just seems to be a bit of a downfall for Rodgers. Once something worked, comes off once, it has to go into the next game. Absolutely has to. Every time he gets a win out trying something new, it has to go into the next game. Now, we can all stand here and say that if you had played 4-3-3, it would have come off. But on reflection, Liverpool against Everton, they were ruthless. Martinez's famous quote, we lost the game trying to win the game. Well, that wasn't the case with West Brom. They just tried to get in our faces and get something out of the game. The odds stacked against them. But Rodgers went with a formation that was specifically for counter-attacking. Now, it wasn't going to really happen that way against West Brom. And I felt that Coutinho should have come out of the team and Allen into the team and start controlling games like they have done previously, with three in the middle, and then let the lads do what they do best up top and score goals, and then have three in the middle who are capable of keeping the ball. Coutinho was brilliant against Everton, but just kind of seemed to go back to his old self, or maybe the game just didn't suit him against West Brom, and maybe a change earlier on. I think Allen came on around 72 minutes or something like that. If you had done that at half time, because you knew West Brom were going to change something, because they were a goal down. But Liverpool were going to keep going the way they were going. So, on reflection, I think he should have played. But maybe he's thinking of the Arsenal game and doing the same 4-2-3-1 again against them. So, you can't really blame him either. But that's just sort of, if it could be critical, it's that.
But it's just cutting in. Andy, I agree in terms of... he's good. He likes to play. If something happens, he likes to do it again. And if it works again, he'll use it again. And for me, I've looked at it and the way we set up on Everton, he actually slightly changed it because Coutinho wasn't doing as much of the doggies as he did against Everton on Tuesday night. And he seemed to be playing more in a 10 role effectively behind the front three. And it was more of a diamond at the top of the pitch than, say, lower down the actual pitch itself. And I thought for myself, I thought Henderson really struggled. And if we're talking about changes, I potentially would have taken Henderson off and brought Joe Allen on.
Henderson looked leggy, yes.
And brought Coutinho back into the midfield. Because it just seems to stand, again, we've got standard substitutions that he likes to make. Coutinho always seems to come off. When in fact we were pushing for a goal, and if you want the player there to open things up, Coutinho can provide that moment of magic. I'd probably rate Coutinho's chances of making something happen higher than, say, Henderson's. it's a common criticism. I don't think his in-game management is that great. You said what happened with his in-game management last week when we were reviewing the actual derby. Mm. And I said there was no in-game management for the derby because he didn't need in-game management. He needed in-game management on Sunday, and I thought again it was a little bit lacking. As Andy said, I would have made the change at halftime. Our midfield didn't look right at halftime. The only one that was functioning in that midfield was Steven Gerrard because he was playing exactly how he was meant to play.
Yeah. Paul Machen, fair to criticise Rodgers on his approach to the match, or was it more simply the personnel letting him down on the day, do you think?
I don't know. It seemed obvious that he was going to the game team, really, didn't it? But I think obviously with that you can't say with any certainty, can you? But I think for me it was a matter of intensity more than the players and the system. I think, you know, the players that we've got out there, we should have been pressing more in the first half. We should have been putting them under more pressure. But I agree on Henderson. He looks jaded at the minute. He looks like he needs a rest. And as we got into second half, Coutinho was exactly the same. And, you know, that's essentially, it depends on what the formation is, that's, you know, pretty much two of your three midfielders who have got no legs left in them after 60 minutes. And that's a major concern. It's strange. I think if it come a week later and Joe Allen probably would have started that game for Henderson, it would have given us a little bit more. Like I say, I don't know that it's necessarily we made a glaring mistake of what we did, but it's the fact is those players you put out on that pitch should be able to go to West Brom and win. I mean, the only counterpoint to that, and I think it's something Rodgers mentioned himself, is that, you know, we got beat there last season, and, you know, on the balance of things, I've seen us having conceded the equaliser. I've seen so many Liverpool sides over the years completely capitulate, and we managed to not quite do that. This is me desperately trying to fill half a glass.
Yeah,
you understand. I think that I think the players thought, similar to Bournemouth in some respects, it felt a bit like we'd gone out there and said, oh, look, we'll be all right, we'll just get through, we'll get a goal, and then we'll just be fine. You know, a goal should be enough to win this game for us. And on any other day, I mean, I know Mignolet makes a great save, but on any other day, Colo Torre does not pass it straight to Victor Anachibi. Mm.
Yeah.
And we go on and win that game, and we're all talking about what a functional, solid win we got there. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes.
Fair enough. Well, let's take it from the general into more specific areas of the team. And James Owens, can I ask you on this? The cock-up between Mignolet and Touré, was it a one-off, or is it indicative of something that's sort of an issue? This idea of playing from the back, is that to be admired at all times, or are there times in where you just clear your lines? What was your take on that?
Well, I mean, just before I do that, I mean, a quick point just on the game generally yesterday, and, you know, the debate as to whether or not we kind of got it wrong tactically. There's maybe an argument for some of that, but I mean, more than anything, I think it was just a very, very lacklustre game. Just right, crowd were very subdued. That's a completely irrelevant thing, particularly as the away team. But I thought it was just poor from both teams. Can you think of one good attacking thing we did, with the exception of the chance that Foster saved from Suarez and the goal? Very, very little. It was, yeah. I mean, Sterling had a good game, but obviously in terms of our actual, you know, cohesive passages of attacking football, there was very, very little from either team. And it was, West Brom's set-piece deliveries were awful. Both teams were poor. And I think, you know, obviously we've gifted it to West Brom a bit with the mistake. I mean, the most outstanding aspect of either performance from either team was West Brom's cynicism. I quite admired it. I thought they were brilliant in, you know, with just the kind of rotation of fouls. I think they had four or five players booked in the end, didn't they? And they're fouling, and just some of the tactical fouls, I thought, were brilliant.
Did four players booked just for fouling Sterling yesterday?
Yeah, and just they just spoiled really, really well. I was quite impressed with that.
Do you know, on that, James, one of the things that I was really impressed with was the focus for 20 minutes was on Jakob, right? And the referee looked at Jakob, and Jakob played up. If that was intended, he got all the attention brought on to himself. The referee then spent most of the time looking at Jakob to see if he's making any more fouls, you know, to give him more warnings. It just took and it allowed Mulumbu and the other players to actually go around and make as many fouls as they want, to be totally honest. Like, they actually got more fouls in because of it, you know?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't put that kind of cynicism past him, and I'm not saying that in a critical way. I'm saying that out of admiration, because I think it's still something we're not as good at as we need to be, particularly if we do go on, actually, and finish in the top four and we get into the Champions League. We need to be a lot better at that kind of thing, because I don't think it's something we excel at, and it would, you know, as much as the fact that we've got possibly the best aggregate of any team in the world in terms of the combined ability of our best and our second best striker, which will always help you win games even when you don't play well. We need to improve that kind of thing. But I mean, with regard to the Mignolet and Torre, I mean, I said you know, West Brom dominated the ball early on yesterday. I mean, I said at one point, we've got a bit of a problem here in that we've got a couple of lads too many at the back who shit themselves in possession of the ball. Mm-hmm. Mignolet's not great. I mean, look, the thing with Mignolet is overall, he's a significant upgrade on Reina because of just his ability to actually, you know, stop goals.
I think Napoli would be happily taking Mignolet at this stage.
Well, exactly. I mean, the problem with that is, you know, are we going to offload Reina without him to pay a chunk of his wages? Because he's not done too well out there. Yeah. But I mean, in answer to the point about the defence, Flanagan's... I don't think it's even technical ability so much as just a lack of pace that limits Flanagan with the ball.
Well, James, talk to me specifically about the central partnership. I know you've got strong enough ideas about it.
I mean, obviously, without two good options at centre-back, there are two options we wouldn't use together in Agger and Sacco, because we've not, and obviously it seems as though Rodgers has got the kind of the reservations about it with him being two left-footers. But, I mean, Toure, yeah, I know Phil thinks that obviously playing left-sided centre-back doesn't help him. You know, he may well have a point, but his form hasn't been as good. I mean, even against Everton, he wasn't one of the better performers on a night where everybody played reasonably well. And I think the slight concern there, and this isn't really so much the mistake, I mean, it's not very good, and I think Rodgers has come out and sort of hinted at blaming Mignolet, saying he shouldn't receive the ball there, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, we're obviously, you know, they're not the most toys about the best at back five on the ball. You know, Sissoko's hopeless on the ball, and it's not easy when you haven't got very good outlets at fullback in possession. I mean, Toure's made the mistake. And obviously we pay for it. Well, these things happen. I mean, statistically, we make a lot of those with the ball. I know something Dan Kennett talks about a lot. You know, everyone will know Dan Kennett from Twitter and various podcasts and the Tompkins Times. But with the thing that concerns me with it is Toure's level has dropped. And yeah, you know, he's obviously a great dressing room figure. He's won titles. But again, looking ahead, because yesterday it's poor, it's not the end of the world. We're still in possession of fourth place. If we go on and actually finish it in fourth and we end up in the Champions League, can we afford, with possibly a 60-game season, to be in a situation where, look, Skirtle may go. We ought to be thinking, is Skirtle's done well, but we ought to be thinking we can upgrade at right centre-back. Yeah. You've got to be looking at getting in one right centre-back, but do you want to go and buy a dedicated backup then? Because if you do, well, that's a lot of expenditure for a player who might not play a lot. But alternatively, you could be in a situation where your backup is Toure, who is possibly falling down a hill ability-wise with age. And the other alternatives are kind of Ilorian Wisdom back off loan, who would be going in probably a bit wet behind the ears, really, in terms of experience at that level issue, though. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Andy, let's move it away from the centre halves at the moment and go to an issue that Paul touched on there, was the sort of relative fatigue that was evident in some of the players. Henderson certainly looked to be a little bit off colour. I've heard people say, I think fair enough, that Suarez looked a little bit off and could possibly do with a rest as well. What would be your take on that, especially in the midfield area?
I suppose there couldn't be two more contrasting games, like going from the derby under the lights at Anfield, screaming crowd, and to Sunday morning straight out of scratcher onto the pitch. Away game against West Brom, like, you know, you can't, like, I mean, they're human beings, they can't get themselves up for that kind of game. And the point Paul made there about kind of the Bournemouth kind of mentality, maybe they thought that they'll just see this game out, you know, and that was there, like, it was very pedestrian, kind of like a little bit of hodgeball going on, and it was just,
you know, just
sorry?
They've said no, she says I'm acting a Hodgson voice, sorry.
even I'm watching a game and my wife walks in and says, they're playing very slow today. And I said, if you can see that.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite clear, like, it was, you know, a big difference in the tempo and how much. And look, it's not really a decision when it comes to that. You get up for games when it's huge, like,
yeah.
And again, they're human beings. Like, it's an effect that it has on your body. It's not just, oh, it's only West Brom. Like, look, I mean, they nearly did come away there with 3 points that would have been as satisfying as the derby. We would have said, oh, look, they played shit. And they've come away with 3 points, and we would have been all like thinking that's a great part of learning, like, for the team, because they can win 1-0. Like, I don't think we've had that really all season.
The ugly win,
you know. And I mean, that, like, it's great when they're scoring goals for fun, but that would have been nice just to come away there. And only for Torres' catastrophic error, like, I mean, okay, like, it'd be boring if we just slaughtered him all night. Like, he was brought in as the player who you would expect that the least from. Like, all his experience, you know, going back to the goalkeeper was absolutely on. They did a fucking 99 times during the game. Why not do it that extra time?
He said, and, he said, in his fairness, he said he doesn't see an Ichibi.
He said he didn't see an Ichibi behind Gerrard.
Yeah. And like that, we've seen Gerrard do something similar with Henry on a couple of occasions. If he doesn't see an Ichibi, like, it's very hard to castigate him over the pass. All it is that, yes, it descends. An easier thing would be to go back to Mignolet, but he thought the pass was on. Like, it's one of those things that he thinks is on.
Yeah, but even if you give that ball in there, it just it makes it very difficult for whoever was receiving the ball, be it Gerrard or Skirtle or whoever, to look up then and control the ball and pick it. Like, he would have been putting them under serious pressure. And we've across the back, like, you've got four players who are shitting themselves, are very, very hesitant on the ball. Mm. Like, Touré, I'm actually surprised. Like, I mean, obviously we've all watched Touré when he's played for Arsenal, City and whoever. But I never realised how hesitant and how indecisive he was. Like, even his ball over the top in the Everton game, it was just like, oh, shit, you know.
Yeah, no, yeah,
he's very hesitant and very rarely kind of gives the early ball, and some of his runs, and he kicked the ball out of play. Like, I mean, they're all okay, but Sissoko runs the ball out as well. Like, they're all very hesitant. They're not sure of themselves in the ball, and I think Skirtle's probably going through one of his best run of form in the team in a long time. Like, but he normally is quite hesitant on the ball again. So don't pass it to fucking players who are quite hesitant at the back. And I know Mignolet is not much better, but just touch it back to him and let him pump it far, because that's what he did for the whole fucking game anyway.
Yeah, in fairness, Paul Machen, speaking about defence for a second and keeping it going there, Stephen Gerrard basically played as a third centre-half for an awful lot of that match, as he has done on a regular basis in this defensive midfield role. He's often there splitting the two of them, the most deep of the players. I thought yesterday he seemed quite competent, provided a very good shield. But was there something to be said that his position maybe dragged the play a little bit deeper, dragged the whole team back a bit? What was your take on that?
It's not something I noticed. I mean, I don't know. It's what I noticed about Stephen Gerrard in that position is that he didn't look like a total fucking liability, which was nice.
Because
against Aston Villa, he looked completely out of his depth, and that was a major worry to me. And we were talking on Redmond like the week after, like, is this experiment over? Is it a complete failure? And then he goes and has a worldie against Everton, and then I actually thought of everyone on that pitch, I think he was the only one who totally carried this form on from Everton into that game. That first half, I thought he was excellent. I don't know. It's not. Maybe it's just I don't watch football that way. But I didn't notice that in particular. I just looked like he was just doing it. He looked like he was doing what Lucas was doing, except just with a bit more. I don't know, a bit more culture to it, which is fine as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as your concerns, it's a success, and you're happy enough to see him there and continue there.
Yeah, well, you know, we were all panicking for and clamouring for a defensive midfield cover, and I still think in the summer it needs to be addressed, definitely. But if Gerrard can put in performances like, I don't know if it's just the second half performance as such, because we were just terrible in general, but his whole performance against Everton and his first half performance against West Brom, if he can do that and he can keep up that level of intensity in the games and not switch off like I've seen him do a few times, and he gets stuck in, he'll be fantastic, and he'll be a great option to have even for a few more seasons in there.
Absolutely.
Just on that, Trev, just to come in, and it boils back to the Henderson point. I think if you look at the real difference between Everton and West Brom in terms of energy that we have on the pitch, right? Henderson, who didn't have a particularly good game yesterday, stops being an outlet for Gerrard when he's on the ball. So when Gerrard drops in between the two centre-back split and he gets the ball there, his next ball he's looking to go is either Henderson or Coutinho, which he was able to do against Everton. So when Everton is hacked and we went to counter, he had two options to give the ball to. Now, Coutinho played that little bit further forward, so he wasn't a real option for when Gerrard got the ball. And Henderson didn't seem to be taking up, you know, good open positions to receive the ball from Gerrard to make the move happen again. And I think, again, that's a bit of tiredness. So while Gerrard was doing his role as he should have been, I thought Henderson, in a way, wasn't as effective in the actual role in midfield, the shuttlers, as he should have been there. And even down to the Touré mistake that happens, he doesn't have an option in front of him in centre midfield to go into. Like, naturally, he's on the ball. He looks up to see who's in centre midfield, and nobody is dropping to receive the ball or looking to receive the ball in centre midfield. So now he's only got three options. He can either go to a fullback, to his goalkeeper, or go across to Skirtle. He thinks Skirtle's on, and he goes to play the ball off. A big issue there is that if our centre mids aren't open and willing to receive the ball, and we're trying to play out from the back, then, as Andy says, if you're going to players who are less than comfortable on the in terms of taking possession as it is, you can't have these mistakes happen. And I'm actually surprised, since Rodgers has taken over, we haven't had more of those type of goals being given away from us. Because the only other one I can really think of is when Skirtle went to go back to Reina in the very first game, match against City, and Tevez nipped in for the equaliser.
Doesn't it show very much how central Jordan Henderson is, though? I remember I had this exact discussion with somebody after the Villa match, that if the kid is off colour, then our whole system kind of breaks down.
And that was when I was talking earlier in terms of, because Henderson wasn't playing well and didn't play too well in the first half, I wouldn't have had an issue had Brendan gone and taken Henderson off at half time and brought Joe Allen in, just because to give him 45 minutes ahead of Arsenal, to put more energy into that midfield. And Allen naturally does that type of role as well. He will always drop and make himself available for that pass from the back.
This comes back to a transfer window failure of not getting another centre midfielder. We're now stuck with Lucas out of injury. We now have three centre midfielders.
Any centre midfielder we would have bought on transfer deadline day, he wouldn't have been able to play against West Brom. So
it's systematic. It's going to keep happening because of the fact that we don't have the numbers to rest players. Jordan Henderson's going to have to play on Sunday or Saturday against Arsenal. There's no question of it.
But that's like, again, he could have taken him off and brought Joe Allen. That's like, we had enough players there on Saturday. It wasn't that we were missing a centre midfielder on the bench. We actually had Thiago Alberto and Joe Allen there.
Phil, I'm curious, you said about the substitution would possibly have been better to take Henderson off, who was at his less than effective, and maybe leave Coutinho on. Did you not think in the game itself that Coutinho's intensity, a word that's been mentioned a couple of times, was pretty dialed down?
Yeah, my only rationale on it is that if you aren't going to bring Luis Alberto in, who is also that type of creative 10-type player, right, to open things up for the last 15, 20 minutes.
Because we're chasing again.
We're looking to get the win here. We're looking to put 3 points on the board, right? Then, in that instance, I think Coutinho could provide more in that time span than say Henderson would have, and that's why, for me, if you're going to take Coutinho, I would have possibly been Allen and Alberto to come in for Coutinho and Henderson and just give more legs in that centre midfield, because neither of them came on during the week as well. You're actually upping the tempo again by making a substitution like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
To be honest, Phil, I think Coutinho just became quite pointless in the game. Like, having Allen, Henderson and Gerrard in the middle might have brought the game forward and out from the back a bit more, because they could just keep the ball. There's enough creative players up front with Sturridge, Suarez and Sterling. You know, in that game, I just felt Coutinho was so much out of it, especially after around, 20 minutes. He kind of started well. He was pointless in the game, and I think, like, a bit more control in midfield could have brought us out and just put a bit more press. It would have been easier, like, physically easier.
So your point is that the change was too late.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I kind of concur with that myself. James Owens, why is it that we have games like this one, the 3-2 all draws, the away games at Swansea and Newcastle, the 2-2 at home to Villa? Why is it that we seem to struggle when there's time left in the match to actually pull on this pressure that's needed and get the result?
It doesn't help that all our best attacking players usually start the game. Now, don't get me wrong, you'd usually pick the best players you've got, but what we've got is a situation. The amount of times I've said this on this podcast is unbelievable, but after the kind of two or three best attacking players, you've got a big drop off. Yeah. What you really want is you want at least one of the very good attacking players you can't quite fit into a kind of a workable system. And then that way, if someone's not having a great day or you kind of need a bit of impetus, you can either take one attacker off and put another on, or if you need a bit of impetus and you need to just kind of like chance your arm, you can just kind of be a bit more gung-ho and, you take a defender or a midfielder off, sort of 101.
Basically what you're saying is, and it's probably the key idea, is that it boils down to lack of options and lack of, incisive options from the bench.
Yeah, and possibly too many kind of like, bets hedged on gambles. Well, not gamble, or fairly expensive kind of gambles, if you like, on potential at a time. And we've not really got the kind of budget where we can afford that. And on the other hand, I suppose, obviously the thing people keep saying, and I think not without merit, because I've said it myself, is, 21 million, 22 million pounds goes in a lorry, Iago Aspas and Luis Alberto in the summer. Now, Ilori could be great in, I don't know, maybe a year, 2 years. Luis Alberto could be. I'm a bit less convinced, though, to be honest, because I think, you know, he's not really getting on in games when we're looking to kind of try and change it. Newcastle's the one exception. And then I think you've got, you know, obviously Aspas, I can forgive. It's a mid-priced kind of punt. 15 million on two players who are never going to contribute much this season. It's dubious. On the other hand, I suppose you could look at it and say in the summer, well, we did try and go and pay 20, 25 million pounds for an attacking player, and we couldn't attract anyone who you'd pay that kind of price for because they wouldn't come to the club. So I don't know. I mean, I think that's one aspect. But then, you know, so we've not really got that much of a bench. But then I suppose there's also, I mean, does that also affect kind of the application of some of the players on the pitch sometimes? Because they're not thinking, well, if we get to 65 here and I've not really contributed much and we haven't broke the deadlock, I could get hooked.
Yeah, but well, that's...
Maybe there is a tactical issue. I mean, I remember at Newcastle particularly, we got a man advantage. We were very, very ponderous and lethargic in our play. So at times it has been an issue, and there obviously wasn't much emphasis yesterday. But yeah, I think the lack of depth is definitely a big part of it.
Yeah, well, look, to maybe try and finish on a slightly upbeat note, Paul Machen, one of the highlights of the match was the performance of Raheem Sterling, who's, well, I've written down here on the agenda that he's become undroppable, but basically anyone who's fit is undroppable at the moment. But what would you think about his rate of progress and his first team position?
He's astonishing, isn't he? It's sort of like, I think I said this on our match reaction the other day, it's like he just woke up one morning and was like, oh shit, yeah, I'm boss, aren't I? You know what I mean? Like it all been like the last year had all been a dream, you know.
Was he in the shower with Colo?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. But it's like, because everyone's creaming over Yanis, this kid coming through, and you know, everyone's forgotten completely just how good Raheem Sterling can be. And to be honest, I was, you know, well, I'll never write anyone off conclusively, like, because you'd only have a 90 minutes away from being a hero, are you, in football? But I think at the start of the season we were looking around and going, yeah, he's got to go on loan, hasn't he? At the very least, I can't see him really making it the highest level. Doesn't have the application. It's not where's his best position, etc., etc. No, he's been a fucking revelation the last probably 2 months now. He's starting to add assists, looking increasingly dangerous in front of goal. He looks like he believes that he can beat any man in a one-on-one. I mean, literally, just like he picks it up and it's literally you know what I compare it to? No, I'm just to drop a random reference in. I always compare it to the bit in The Incredibles where Dash the boy runs on water and he's running and he looks down and he realises that's how good he is. And that's what Sterling's like at the minute. It's like he's gone. All I have to do is accelerate, drop the shoulder and accelerate, and I'll beat anyone. And he does. It's phenomenal. And you can tell just how worried West Brom were by the fact that they just decided to try and boot him up in the air. And
yeah,
better clubs than that have tried and failed. And so, you know, it's going to happen a lot. But I think he's got the mental toughness and the surprise amount of physical toughness to get him through.
It's a good shout that, Paul, the strength that he's starting to show now. We're seeing less and less those little flailing kind of Tyrannosaurus arms as well, aren't we, when he's trying to chink past people. He's literally bombing past people. He's throwing his arse out and knocking people over. And you know, he looks almost a finished article. Andy Young, your thoughts on Sterling?
I'm delighted. How Sterling has come on leaps and bounds, like Paul there, I did kind of start to write him off and kind of figure with myself, maybe we won't see the best out of Sterling till he's around 22 or 23, when he matures a bit, like, and we're always going to see this. Now obviously time will tell, like, you know, he could have a dip in form again, but the way he's playing at the moment, it's I'm just delighted for the kid, because it was quite heartbreaking to think that we've a player coming through that's possibly gone out, set the Premier League alight, and then just fails. But now we're starting to show that promise he's shown in the youth. And Rodgers has gone on record many times saying he gives him a hard time, like, and he's giving him a hard time. But Sterling seems to have benefited from that now, and I think Rodgers is starting to give him the call, you know, that arm around the shoulder and tell him he's beautiful.
I was just waiting for that.
I'm delighted for him now, I have to say, like, you know, because he's got so much talent. It's you hate when you see it wasted.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks a lot. Yep, nice positive way to end the review. Right, so we move on to a preview then of Liverpool versus Arsenal on Saturday coming. Changes may be the order of the day. If Sacco, as rumoured, is fit, would you put him straight in? Are there any other changes that are crying out to be made, do you think? And if so, what are those changes? Andy Young, I'll come to you first on this. Sacco, Mashuin, if he's fit?
Absolutely. Just Touré is far choice for me. So whoever's fit ahead of him plays, basically. So anyone, Agar, Sacco is fit, they come in. Simple as that. I just think he's far too hesitant on the ball, and Sacco could be good, like, because he kind of trust him on the ball, like, yeah. You know, being games, he's completing 90 passes and stuff, like,
yeah.
It's incredible, like, for a player who doesn't really look that competent on the ball, he's very effective and picks out his man perfectly. So I definitely have him come in. You'd have to play three central midfielders as well, and leave Coutinho out. I think getting control of this game, or as much control as possible, is imperative. So I'd have Alan come into the team along with Henderson and Gerrard.
Okay, and obviously the front picks itself, it stays the same, sadly, because we've got no
choice. Front three, you can rely on Sterling to work back, Henderson to give Sturridge, if Sturridge kind of plays wide, or, you know, you're seeing Sturridge and Suarez mixing it about, going left and central. You've Henderson to cover, which, you know, the weakness there, because they're not going to come track back. But, you can rely on Sterling, especially. Like, he finds himself in a right foot position so often and does it so effectively. You know, there's an argument to play him right foot at times, because, you know,
carrying the ball ability over the back is excellent as well.
Yeah.
He does go back to the front.
So, absolutely. Yeah, just try and get as much control in that midfield, and maybe not change the shape too much, but just have one of the boys sit up on top of their own. But, like, just the change in the middle of the park. Coutinho for me, just, it might be pointless.
Okay. James Owens, we'll start with the defence and your thoughts about how that might change. I presume you'd be in agreement with Sacco coming in, if it's possible.
So there seems to be a suggestion, doesn't there, that Sacco will actually be fit?
Yeah, I've seen those as well.
I think if that were the case, you'd bring him back in. They did enough against Everton on a night when the whole team worked well. But, you know, Touré and Sacco, the Touré and Skirtle aren't the most, haven't been the most convincing partnership overall. I think there's the slightly less chance that Alan will make it, I think, isn't there? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the unfortunate thing, you know, is the lack of depth there. Once you've got a couple of injuries, really, you're struggling, because it would be nice to have the option to say, right, okay, Arsenal, they're a strong team, they've got a lot of talent in the midfield area, they retain the ball well, get three, you know, kind of orthodox central midfielders out there to kind of compete and be disciplined. And you maybe, you know, Alan having been out for sort of a month or more, you know, 5-6 weeks now, you perhaps give him 65 minutes, and then if the game's in the balance and we're trying to push for a goal to win it, you give Coutinho 25 minutes in which you say, right, you know, go and do damage. Because I think in that sense, you know, even in that sense, so that could work well. But I don't, you know, perhaps we haven't got that option. Again, that's the, one of the limitations of the lack of depth we've got. Once you've got injuries, and we've not had the best of luck with injuries this season, you're asking people to play a full 90 minutes, and there's not really the scope there to change tactically according to the kind of the game situation.
So, sure. So
We're picking who's fit, aren't we? I mean, we know we're going to have limited options at fullback. So
yeah. The conversation basically begins and ends with the same point, that we pick the best players available, and there are a few of them. Paul Machen, can I ask you if you've seen these tweets from Cafu today? Have you in relation to Flano? Have you seen these?
Yeah. When he calls him, he says he's been referred to as Red Cafu.
I have fan tweets who say Red Cafu is Flanagan at Liverpool. I must watch more Premier League to see both.
I love John Flanagan, but he's going to be very disappointed.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking.
You know what? I really wish. I really, you know, because I had to do. I genuinely love John Flanagan. I think he's brilliant. And I love his endeavour. I love the way I just love him. I think he's a smashing little player. Yeah. But I really wish he was the Scouse Cafu. I really wish it wasn't, like, slightly tongue in cheek. I want Cafu to come down and, you know, and see him and be thrilled by him. But I don't think that he will be.
Why we have you on the line? Well, let's go to the other side of the fence and a player who's been a subject of much discussion here is old Ali on the other side. How did you feel he got on the last day against West Brom?
Ali Sissoko is literally, I think every Liverpool side has got to have a scapegoat in it, because you've got to have someone that you can just hang all your ire and fury on, and obviously Torre took most of it at the weekend. I think Sissoko's all right, isn't he?
Are you happy with him going forward?
I can't sit here and extol his, you know, these mass virtues, like, you know what I mean, because he's a very average footballer from what I've seen. But equally, I've seen some shocking Liverpool players. I've seen some shocking left backs over the years, and I don't think he's as bad as everyone makes out. I just think he's average. I've said this on our show plenty of times. I think on his very best day, he's a 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
But on his worst days, he's maybe a 5 or a 6. And I think he's just steady enough, isn't he? You're not building your team around Ali Sissoko. You're not getting his name on the back of your shirt, but, you know, if you need someone to come in and do a job, it's just, you know, he's doing okay. It's just a shame that in any normal circumstance, you know, Enrique would have been back sooner, and we'd be as fine as we can be with those Enrique. Let's be honest, we don't have, I think even Glenn Johnson, who's our best fullback's been crap for 2 months or more, you know. So but Glenn Johnson, if we use Glenn Johnson as the model on his best day, when he's playing, when he's fully fit and he's playing to the best of his ability, he's top international class. Perhaps, if I'm being overly generous, perhaps bordering on world class. We've got nothing else anywhere near as good as him in the fullback positions in the squad, I don't think.
That's fair enough. To open it up a little bit more and look at the game specifically against Arsenal, how we're going to approach it. Phil, would you think it's fair enough to say that there's not really any good reason why we shouldn't look to play this game pretty much on the counter attack, given that, you know, given the setup, given the team we're playing against, and given who we may have available to us? Or is that something you would agree with?
Arsenal's an interesting game. I we've been fucking diabolical against Arsenal for I don't know how many years. Every time, like, in recent history, they just seem to come to Anfield and walk away with 3 points.
They don't have to do a whole lot.
Yeah, like, even last year, they just came and they walked through us. They literally, Abu Dhabi just walked through our midfield all day long, and Cazorla made a mockery of the defence. Now, you know, I'd look at Joe Allen, Henderson and Steven Gerrard, and you'd say, okay, looking at the potential Arsenal midfield, because seemingly Arteta could be out with a knock now after the other night. You know, I'm looking at it saying our midfield is the equal to the Arsenal midfield going into it this time, right?
What will the Arsenal midfield be? Or what it didn't look like, because Ramsey's obviously out as well.
Chamberlain was very good there yesterday.
Yeah. No,
he's probably going to play.
That's what I'm saying, but they have a makeshift midfield. That's why I'm thinking that our midfield, if Arteta is missing, and given Arsenal's injury problems that they have, that we have an equal. The problem is, looking at the tree that goes behind the Arsenal midfield, and you're looking at, as you said, Cazorla, Ozil, and Chamberlain, and you've got Giroud, and you can just see problems for our back four with the amount of movement that will go on in front of them. So again, you're looking for that sort of level of performance that we had in Everton, and I think, as Paul said, the intensity will be there, and as Andy made out as well, because it's such a big game, our midfield, our players will have that intensity back. You know, it's regardless of who they are, they will have the intensity. As I said, the issue though is that Arsenal have such good memories of coming to Liverpool and walking away from Anfield with 3 points. You know, it's been the way it's been for the last few seasons. We have to stop this. You know, we've managed to do a lot of good things at Anfield this year and make it a fortress, more or less. And this is a huge game for us. If we can win, I said it last week, Arsenal have to be our target in the league. Forget about positions. I think we can catch Arsenal. I'm less confident about it after the weekend, but I think we can still catch them. And if we can get ahead of Arsenal, we're going to finish top three, in my opinion. And that's where we should be aiming for. Forget fourth. Let's aim for top three. And if you can finish in the top three and get ahead of Arsenal, you've made a bigger statement than finishing fourth.
Fair enough. Stephen Brown, is that fair enough to say that we should stop stressing and fretting about Cazorla and all their various wonderful talents and think about, look what we've got, and we just need to build a platform from the defence and in the midfield and give them a chance to do their thing?
Yeah, that's completely, like, you have to agree with everything Phil said. The game's going to come down to what way Brendan Rodgers lines us out on Saturday. Everyone knows exactly what way Arsenal are going to come out and play, what way Arsenal played the exact same way for God knows how many years now at this stage. So it's up to Rodgers to try and figure out a way that we're going to be solid defensively would still have the ability to link our midfield to attack, because that's been an issue in games against Arsenal where the past recently where we haven't been, we've been solid-ish at the back, but we've had no link. It's literally, it's one or the other.
Mm.
We've been all out attack or just defend them, so we've no link. We need to have a link, which is where Coutinho or Alan comes in on Saturday. Mm. Personally, I'd start Alan. I'd rather have Coutinho coming off the bench for half an hour.
Yeah.
Mm.
With the premise that it's 1-0 and it's, or 1-0, 0-0, whatever it might be, and we got to Coutinho, here's half an hour, go in, do what you do.
Fair enough.
It's going to be tough. Like, there's just no way around, regardless of Arsenal's injuries, whether Ted is there or not. Like, the Arsenal are a very good side.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, that's two in a row there, speaking about introducing Coutinho as a substitute. James Owens, would you concur with that?
About using Coutinho as a substitute?
Yeah, and perhaps starting Alan if he's able to start.
Oh, that's, absolutely, yeah. Is Alan able to start? That's the problem.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I probably would. But yeah, I don't know whether or not it's actually an option. And again, that's the issue we've got. We just lack that bit of depth, and obviously, you know, lack of depth combined with a few injuries, and you're struggling a bit. You just kind of got to work with what you've got, kind of like doing different things tactically and what have you. So
yeah, absolutely. Paul, if we're going to maintain our 2 points per game ratio, having lost two there against the Baggies, we need to win this game, basically. We've put ourselves under pressure in order to maintain this magical 2 games per 2 points per game, which gives you Champions League football. Does that put us under extra pressure to win this? Will it, in fact, change the way the team approaches the game, do you think?
I don't know about that. That sounds like the kind of thing Brendan Rodgers would definitely be well up on, but he looks in like blocks of games, doesn't he? I don't know how that impacts it, but I think the motivation's there. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is the team that finishes in fourth in the Premier League is the team that is consistently the least shit out of the teams going for it, and you know, and so we, you know, and it, so I think, you know, if we get a point from it, I think a point is enough for fourth place, that kind of thing. That's the kind of form. But if we've any ambitions of being any more than that, if we want to have it sewn up, I mean, if we get a point, then I think fourth is going to go to the wire and it's going to be horrific the rest of the season as we just stress over every single game. Mm. But if we can somehow get a win, the confidence that gives you, and if we can get a few players back from injury, you know, I think Brendan Rodgers must be looking at it and thinking, well, you know what, if you're aiming for fourth and you miss fourth, you end up in fifth or sixth.
Mm.
You know, whereas we should be still aiming for sort of second, third in the league. You know, heaven forbid, let's look higher and see what happens, you know what I mean? And at the end of the day, if you beat Arsenal, you can beat anyone. And that's what the team have got to think.
Fair enough. Well, look, seeing as you're still on the line, and we've looked at pretty much how we think the team is going to look shape-wise, could you give us an idea of how you think it's going to go prediction-wise?
Christ, we're going to concede, aren't we? Because that's what happens.
Okay.
I don't know. It's not, we've got a running thing in Anfield where if me and Chris go and get a double decker and a can of Coke on the water from this particular newsagent on a walk to the ground, then we win 4-1.
Jesus, stick with that, man. Yeah.
So we'll do our best. We'll do all we can, obviously, for the team.
Fucking heroes.
No, I don't know. I think, to be honest, if we can get, you know, if it's 2-1 and we score a horrible goal in the last minute to win it, fucking amazing.
Oh yeah, get in. I'll take that as well. James Owens, your prediction.
I seem to find myself making this prediction a lot, and I've no idea, because I think, you know, predictions are usually pointless, but I'll say Liverpool 2, Arsenal 2.
Excellent.
I seem to predict that score a lot. I don't know. I did for the derby, so hopefully I'm just as wrong again, but, you know, with us winning 4-0.
Okay, right. Thanks, James. Stephen Brown, prediction.
1-0.
Okay. Andy Young.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Have I caught you on the hop, Andy? Did you not see this question coming?
I was thinking about it all day, really.
Get the fucking boat, will you?
No. Honestly, fucking God, I just can't call this one. Jesus Christ. Like, look, Arsenal didn't tear Crystal Palace asunder, like everyone expected yesterday. Crystal Palace put on a very, very good fight, especially in the first half. If Liverpool kind of play this counter-attacking thing that they did against Everton, it could work out very well for them, and especially I think if they get an extra man in the midfield.
Yeah.
Arsenal's midfield just doesn't tend to be as devastating as it was when, you know, Ramsey was there and he was scoring all them goals and Ozil was really, really playing well. So, like, we might not be over on a midfield. I think if we're not over on a midfield, we've plenty for them, you know, Sturridge and Sterling and Suarez. So fuck it, 2-1 Liverpool.
That's it. We got there eventually. Yeah, on the premise that Suarez isn't going to be shit. Or ineffective twice in a row, I'm going to say that we pull the result out here and we get a win. Phil Casey, your shit.
I think we're going to win 5-0.
Oh, is this
I genuinely do. Like, remember I said we were going to thump Spurs?
Yeah.
I have the exact same reason going into the Arsenal game. I think we're going to fucking pummel them. I don't know why. I just think we're genuinely going to pummel them.
You're just going to think it's going to be one of those.
It's just one of those moments that's going to happen. Do you remember we did it a couple of years ago when Crouchy went wild and fucking destroyed Jens Lehmann? I'm going 5-0 us.
Okay.
I just got to show Steve Daly's prediction out there, 3-1.
Well, it's important to
he's
get
he's going
to
pick 3-1 anyway, so it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, okay. Right then, on to listeners' questions. Like this part of the show, we get to understand a little bit more about the folks that listen to us, and you get a chance to hear what a collection of odd balls we really are. So we're going to go with the first question tonight. That's from Forza Bobby. He's at Mersey Boy Red, actually. And he's wondering, if you could choose any film in which you would be the lead role, which film would you cast yourself in, Stephen Brown?
Just to clarify the question, is this a film that's already been made?
It's not a porno. You have to pick a film like
that. No, a film that's already been made. Like,
yeah, existing film.
Okay, I'm three.
Jesus. Pick one. That was the question.
Go. Give us your favourite. Give us your favourite, fella.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay. Excellent.
See where you're coming from.
Yeah, it wasn't a porno. You had to pick.
Excellent.
Could have picked Boogie Nights. That was second.
Paul Machen.
Back to the Future.
Okay, any particular reason, mate?
Because the DeLorean's fucking amazing.
That'll do. Next one's from Michael.
Hoverboards. Sorry, hoverboards.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Actually, that's what sells it, yeah.
They're coming out next year, aren't they?
Are they? What?
Yeah, this year was the year that you went to the future.
Excellent.
Yeah. Can't wait for that.
Can I just say Michael Douglas in Falling Down?
I think you should.
If not that, then Peter Gibbons in Office Space.
Oh, you've caused a bit of silence in the room here. What's that all about? Why would you choose that?
Fuck's sake. No one's seen Office Space.
Sorry, James. Sorry, mate. Sorry. No. Sorry about that, fella. Sorry. No, that's a new one on us. Why the Michael Douglas one gives that shit?
Because he goes berserk, doesn't he? And he just sort of sets the world to rights. I mean, he ends up dead, so that's a bit sad.
That's unfortunate. You know, maybe...
Spoilers.
Okay, right.
I'm get off the line now, I think.
Next question's from Michael. He's at John Locke's Legs. He wants to know, would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 20 duck-sized horses, Phil Casey?
You'd have to go for the 20 duck-sized horses.
Boy, you just kicks.
You can just kick them to Jesus. Not that I advocate kicking duck-sized horses.
No, a horse-sized duck.
A horse-sized duck would be.
That is a fucking scary idea.
Imagine the size of its wings.
I'd
rather climb on board like the Neverending Story and use it as a means of transport.
See where you're going with that. Kieran, he's at Nave Kieran, presents us with a hypothetical scenario here, and it is quite good. You've just failed robbing a bank with Ali Sissoko, Paul Konchesky, and Roy Hodgson as your crew, basically. Can you explain to me what went wrong? James, I know you've given this some thought. Can you explain to me what went wrong with the heist, James?
Well, everything was going very, very well, and Paul and Ali had got into the safe, but unfortunately we were apprehended by officers because I got talking to one of the bank staff about my very successful time in Neuchatel Xanax, and rather too long, and unfortunately we found ourselves very, very quickly in custody, which was rather a shame because everything had been proceeding very, very well up to that point.
Fair enough. Okay, next one up is from Dave. Last week's bunker guest here, he's at Satrial80 on Twitter, and he asks, if Dirty Dancing has the best movie soundtrack of all time,
what is the second best movie soundtrack of all time. He has specifically requested Phil must sing the answer here. So I'll ask Phil in a few seconds if he's willing to do that. But Stephen Brown, second best movie soundtrack of all time.
Casino.
Casino. Give me one of the tunes from that.
The best piece of film to music, or music to film ever, is
Rolling Stones?
The end. No, the very end, when Joe Pesci gets hit with a shovel in the head.
Oh, yeah?
And it's the House of the Rising Sun where the animals just kicking in.
Very nice. Very nice. Phil, I see you searching through your phone, fella. Have you got a share for me? Are you just going to...
Yeah, I'm going with Scarface.
Okay. Soundtrack?
Push it to the limit. The limit!
Jesus, web. Nobody saw that coming. Yeah. Next one's from Simon Furnival, again, a guest from 2 weeks ago. He asked a very direct question. I'm going to come to you on this one, Paul Machen. Do you know what Nemesis means?
Well, in purely Star Trek terms, it means that you've got to get Tom Hardy to play young Jean-Luc Picard, but... No Star Trek fans.
No, sorry, mate. No. More tumbleweed.
I'm with you.
Sci-fi boy here is happy with your question, with your answer there. Jim Fishlock, our AI podcast chum, has a culinary query for you, Andy Young. What is your ideal lunchtime snack? Would you go for a panini or a baguette or a plain sandwich? What do you like, Andy?
Sweet chili chicken wrap.
Fucking hell, specific.
Yeah, which is sun-dried tomatoes. And the lettuce, yeah. And then Johnny Onion Rings with them.
Onion Rings. Do you make that for the boys down the station, dude?
Just Nolly, he's at Just Nolly 1. He wants to know, yesterday was Groundhog Day, so what antics would you get up to on a Groundhog Day? I think there's probably going to be a couple of takers for this. James Owens, I'm going to come back to you on that.
This is terrible. I've not seen Groundhog Day. What's the basic premise? You might want to ask someone else.
It's basically
fucking Office Space.
Yeah. Office Space and hasn't seen Groundhog Day.
Basically, the same thing happens again and again, James. So, if you could repeat your actions on a daily basis, what would they be? Right, John Moore. He's at 23 Carrot God, and he says, "When did you first discover that Santi wasn't real, Stephen Brown? When did you realise? What age were you, fella?"
I was nearly 11.
Were you crestfallen, or did you know already?
I was having an idea, like, yeah. The lads in school would be telling you, which you don't want to believe it. Like,
yeah. So 10 age. Or 11, you got that far.
Yeah.
Andy Young, how far did you get?
I don't remember when, but I can certainly remember when, like, I had the discussion with the folks, because like, I tried to keep it going as long as possible, like, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I did but, the same.
Like, funny enough, there was a few other questions to be asked when we actually had the discussion about Santa. So obviously, like, right, so the Easter egg, the Easter bunny, that's not true either, no.
Right. Was that not your entry level one that you were told?
No, well, like, just it exists the discussion, so
right,
like,
it all
like,
fell apart
because
the
like, there was rumours.
Oh, bollocks, right. You know,
there was rumours.
There was a transfer class. Window.
So when it came
never
to...
Never seen the Easter bunny.
When
never
came
seen
to,
tracks or nothing.
But I do remember going, so what about Jesus?
Are you Easter Bunny, Santi, and Jesus?
I said to my ma, so is Jesus a lot of bollocks? That's just another one of the fucking wind-ups.
That's a fucking proper Father Ted moment, that one.
So, fucking clip around the air.
I'd say you did.
I was just going to say, I always remember being a bit sceptical about it from very early, if I'm honest.
Oh, yeah. So you couldn't pinpoint when, though?
Yeah, it wasn't really a kind of a black and white thing as to when I believed or when I didn't. I was always pretty sort of, I was always pretty sceptical.
You're just in the know. What about you, Paul?
Sorry, I like the idea of James doing like a Columbo-esque bit with his parents.
Just one more question.
No, well, I was probably about 7.
Oh, yeah.
7 or 8. When I found my Atari ST in my mum and dad's cupboard in the build up to Christmas, like, and you know, there's something wasn't right there. I was just like, you know, they were like, but you know, Santa Claus just realized, like, just one more thing. And they couldn't.
brilliant, okay.
Can I give you another little story about it?
Fucking hell.
Confessions of an Andy.
You'll
hate me for this one.
Is this another religion story?
This is the youngest person I ever told there was no such thing as Santa.
Oh, yeah?
I was playing Xbox Live this night, and playing Call of Duty, and there was some little squeaky shit, and he was being real cheeky and slagging the Irish, and he was doing everything. You could tell he was only like 6 or 7. So I said, listen, Skip, there's no fucking such thing as Santa, and all your presents in your ma's wardrobe, whooping shit, if you don't believe me. And it's just the silence was fucking deafening. And I'm thinking, bollocks, that must be bad.
Jesus Christ, that's harsh.
Fucking little bollocks dessert.
What's your gamer tag?
Phil Casey.
Dream Crusher 101. Right, next one's from Carl Trotman. Interesting one, this. Stephen Brown, if you could follow one Twitter account, only one, which one would it be?
The Day Trippers.
Oh, on message. Excellent.
Andy, you know what's a fucking class?
Oh, fucking hell. Yes, Andy, sorry.
The Liverpool history show that's coming
to Nicky Yalt's Twitter account. That's fucking brilliant.
And for
the pictures they put out are brilliant. Yeah.
Okay, next one up is Andy Rowe. He's at Andy P. Rowe. He asks, I'm going to get everyone on this. Who's your favourite Muppet? Who's your favourite Muppet? Paul Machen. Gonzo's a Muppet. That'll do. James.
I can't really think of the Muppets off the top of my head, but I'll say Animal was one of the Muppets, wasn't he? I always confuse the Muppets and Sesame Street and all that stuff.
Animal was okay. Animal's yours.
Animal played the drums, didn't he? So I played the drums.
That's
so.
The lad. That's the lad. Steve Brown, you look upset. Animal, yeah.
I had it written down. Gonzo and Animal.
Gonzo and Animal. What about you, Andy?
Cookie Monster.
Cookie, is he a Muppet?
He's not Sesame Street. No, he was a Muppet as well.
Sesame Street.
Muppet.
Who is a Muppet?
Just give Kermit a shout. Give poor fucking Kermit a shout. Go on.
Kermit the Frog, or is Mrs. Cracker.
She was, in
fact. The two lads that sit in the booth are brilliant.
You can't have 7 shouts, Phil.
That's Waldorf and Statler.
That's
it. I would go for Rolf. Or Dr. Teeth.
You go with Dr. fucking whatever.
Rolf or Dr. Teeth.
Go for Dr. Oh, Dr. Teeth. He was the two boys from the jazz band.
Yeah.
No, Rolf for me, every day. Rolf comes in, he's 8 out of 10, he puts a shift in. Yeah. No fucking messing, no fucking Kermit the Frog shit.
Great ears.
Top ears. Yeah. He's a solid citizen. I like Rolf. The last one, or second last one. Would you rather be a rock star, a footballer, or a movie actor? And which... what would be your reason for that? I'll start here on my right, Andy. Rockstar, footballer, movie actor.
Footballer,
reason?
Absolutely. Reason?
Yeah.
Just be better, I don't know.
Just be better, I don't know. Brilliant.
Kind of best of every world there, like.
Okay, nice one. Stephen Brown, footballer, actor, rockstar.
Rockstar.
Why?
Just the whole buzz of being on stage in front of 50, 60, 70,000 people just on your own. Just,
quality.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Quality. James, rock star, movie star, or footballer?
I think a rock star over a footballer, because there's no real pressure to be a sort of a sensible role model as a rock star. You're expected to be a womanizing prick, so I think for that reason.
Okay, Paul Machen finishes out. Which of the three? Rock star, footballer, movie actor?
Where was the option for Z-List online TV presenter?
Sorry, mate, we should have fucking... We just weren't thinking, fella.
No, I think when I was like 10 or 11, it was football. When I was 17, it was rock star. And as I get older, I think after, I'd love it. Being a movie actor would be nice, wouldn't it?
I think that'd be nice as well, yeah. Fairly young finishes out.
Yeah, it must be a nice thing. I'm going with movie actor as well. Because then you can just get to play you can get to play a rock star in a movie.
And a footballer.
And you can get to play a footballer in a movie. But and then you get to hang out with all deadly looking women.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean? It's got. I look at Colin Farrell. He has such limited talent, but look at the life he has.
Harsh.
Okay,
right. That's it. That's about us. Okay, just some admin. Then we'll announce the winners of the Carrot Day Trip competition on At Liverpool Ways and at the Day Trippers 1 on Friday. Still time to enter, so check out our Twitter feed for that. It's at Day Trippers 1 for details of how you can still enter, and we'll tweet it tomorrow. The HGC Cup in Ireland is on March the 22nd. It's in Astro Park. Details will be on our timeline tomorrow. Get a team in so we can teach you a footballing lesson with our delightful skills here. We're going to win it, but you should feel free to be one of the teams that we beat on the way.
Yes.
Big thanks as always to Johnny Rep for our class intro music there. A new single, Give, is out now. You can follow all our news and views on our smart feed at Liverpool Ways, so follow that great account. If you want some excellent articles as well, get on to beyondthecop.com as well. My own writing you can find 4 days a week on Liverpool Offside. That's liverpooloffside.sbnation.com, which you should be checking out on a regular basis. Don't forget to follow us and subscribe to our Trippery Fair either on Podbean, iTunes, or via any podcatcher on Android. So, your day trippers tonight were Paul Machen, James Owens, Andy Young, Stephen Brown, the golden tonsured Nicky Filage Casey, and myself, the man who dare not speak his own name correctly, Trev Downey. Remember, it was a groundhog day.
Downey!
You just fucked the ending of it completely. Anyway, see ya.